Well, I'm glad you're here tonight. We're going to do a lesson that I probably do a version of this every several years because I think it's needed to keep coming back to this idea here, talking about minimums and maximums. I'll get into all that here in just a minute. I saw a picture of an activist at a pro-homosexual marriage rally. This person was carrying a sign years ago, and it says, "If we are not entirely free, then we are not free at all." If we are not entirely free, then we are not free at all. This woman interprets freedom as being, no one can tell me what I can or cannot do. I answer to no one. Apparently, that's what she's thinking in that expression of her thoughts in that sign. This is ironic to me because that same person is bound by traffic laws, human limitations. She's bound by the laws of the land and to pay taxes and so on. She's bound to earth by laws of physics and gravity. She's bound to grow old. And she's bound to die because of time and human limitations. And yes, she's bound to answer to God for promoting such behavior. Thus, she's really never free at all. I mean, by her own language, by her own words, she's really never free at all. And of course, legalizing homosexual marriage is not going to change that. It's a whole other story, though. The further irony here with respect to this woman is that she's expecting other human beings to grant her this freedom. She's basically asking all of us permission to give her unlimited freedom. I mean, just think about the irony there. Even if we gave her such freedom, as if we could do that, then that freedom would be temporary, finite, and of course very fragile, because it could disappear just as easily as it was given. This is kind of a delusional concept here, you know, that this idea of, well, we're not free unless we're, you know, entirely free and so on. Well, okay, that sounds good on a sign at a rally, but practically speaking, just doesn't really work that way. All people long for freedom, and yet they'll never realize it here on earth, except in one context we can realize that, and that is in our relationship with Christ. And I know what someone's going to say. They're going to say, well, we're not free there either. There's rules, there's laws, there's regulations, things we got to do. Well, that's the usual response. And yet that doesn't really understand the nature of what we're talking about here or the nature of Christian freedom. A typical description of Christianity, at least by those who may have been churched rather than converted, would be something along the lines of, well, you have to do at least this much, but you don't have to do any more than that. There's kind of a boundary, a bookends, if you will, on either side of that. That's what I like to call the minimum and maximum approach. So spiritual life, spiritual service, spiritual thinking does not conform to such rigid or worldly interpretations. We're told in Galatians 6, verse 2, Paul says, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Well, there's that law thing, right? See? But the law he's talking about here actually, ironically, really paradoxically, refers to one's love for God and one's love for his fellow man. It is a law because it's commanded. It is a law because it's obligated. But it's not a law that defines the minimums or maximums of behavior. And that's what's interesting about it. What he's really saying is that we're not supposed to love just because we have to. We're supposed to love without limits. That's really what we're being told. That is the law of Christ, is to love without limits. And yet not everyone has an understanding of the gospel and that freedom that it offers. You know, it's typical of new converts or those new to Christianity, and I'm not speaking derogatorily about such people whatsoever when I say this, but it's typical because of how they've been conditioned in the world and how they've been conditioned to think perhaps toward religion. They'll say something like, well, how little must I do? Well, maybe not in those words, but you know, what do I have to do? What's the bare minimum I have to do? What is the minimum of my service? And they say this because they're just not yet spiritually minded. Probably a lot of us said that, quite honestly. Maybe there's some of us still saying that. And that's where we're getting at here, right here. So, you know, if we see that or hear that from someone who's just been baptized, say, in the last year, well, that's expected. Nothing criminal in that, of course. But if you've been a Christian for 5 or 10 or 20 years and you're still saying that same thing, you really need to relook at what you're doing and relook at the religion that you're professing and really that at the allegiance that you have given to God. This idea of what is the least I can do and still get to heaven. It's not surprising when we hear that sort of language in people, especially, as I said, that people have been Christians for some time now. It's not surprising that we see very little growth in those people. The reason for that is because they have zero plans for growth. With that kind of mentality, they have zero plans. There's no room there for growth. There's no plans for growth. There's no purpose for growth. There's no plans for change or being transformed. It's all about not doing any more than I have to do. And so you see this in the religious world. It's not surprising to see that, because the religious world doesn't really always gravitate to the depth and the richness of divine grace and mercy and our gratitude toward that. The religious world often, let's just say it, is conditioned by, you know, what do you have to do and when do you show up and, you know, what song do you sing next and when do you say amen, you know, when do you chant the prayer. You know, there's a lot of that going on in the religious world, and yet that's not what God is asking from us. In Matthew 19, verse 16 and following, there's that story of the rich man who came to Jesus and says, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Here's a man who thought or gave what he thought God expected, but not all that God deserved. I want you to think about that. He gave all that God expected, in his own mind anyway, but he didn't give all that God really deserved. He was noble enough to ask Jesus, "Is there anything else that God expects?" Jesus had said, "Well, you keep the commandments, and which ones?" And Jesus, you know, rattles off a number of the commandments there. He said, "Well, I've kept all those. Is there anything else? Is there any law, any rule, any observation that I've missed there?" And Jesus says, "Well, there are those things, and then that which has no limits, and that is a living and holy sacrifice. What I really want is your heart. What I really want is your love." And upon hearing that, in essence, I'm paraphrasing what's said there, but in hearing that, in essence, he turned and walked away because he really wasn't willing to give that. I want you to think about that just for a moment here. That, you know, we've got people in the church, even outside the church and other religions, who are very noble-minded, very generous, if you will. You know, they've got a big heart about giving things, but not necessarily giving up their heart itself. Okay? So what God is after is not your stuff. He's not after your money, your wallet, your purse. He's not after your possessions. He already owns those, by the way, if you didn't know. Okay? But one thing he doesn't have until you give it to him, and that's your heart. Or we could say it's your love for him. That's what he's really after. And that's what's going to change you the most. When he has that, then that's when the transformation really begins. If he has your possessions, well, you know, a certain amount of transformation might come about simply from that, but that's not really what he's after. Okay, so he's not really after about measurements of your physical things. And on that note, think about these Pharisees here that Jesus refers to in Matthew 23, verse 23. He says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice, mercy, faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others." So here's some Pharisees, and you can just imagine these people. You know, it's a 10% rule, right? That's what tithe means, 10%. So, you know, they get a stalk of parsley or celery or something like that, and you can just see them just chopping off 10% and giving that to the Lord. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying here. Imagine they've got a, you know, maybe a leek or an onion or something. 10% goes to God. You know, here's a little bit of, you know, cinnamon or nutmeg or something like that. 10%, so many grains, goes to God, right? And he's saying, you're very meticulous in that. You're very specific as to, you know, that sort of measurement or that quantification there. And yet you've missed the biggest thing of all, like, as he says here, justice and mercy and faithfulness. What he's really saying is, yeah, I've got your attention and I've got your attention to detail, but I don't have your heart. I don't have your love. You miss the biggest part of all. You observe laws, measurements, and quantities, but you neglect that which is immeasurable. You neglected the spiritual content. And you hear that sort of thing today in so many words. How little do I have to give? Or, you know, when will God be satisfied with, you know, how little I give? Which laws, which commandments, which rules have to be observed? Not which ones can I and freely want to, but which ones do I have to meet in order to be right with God? And by implication, which ones don't I have to? Which ones can I get away with not having to observe? You know, maybe there's other people out there that want to be, you know, super religious and everything. That's not me. I just want to be kind of, you know, moderately religious, or maybe just minimally religious. I just want to do what I have to do, and I need to know what applies to me personally. Here's how I can put it in modern language. I want the full retirement package, but I only want to work part-time. And that's really what it comes down to, isn't it? You want the full retirement package. But you only want to work part-time, that person's basically saying. And just imagine, that just fills God's heart with pride and, you know, just, he's so proud of people when he hears that sort of thing from them. No, you know that he's not. I think our response to such a person would be this: do the best to observe all the commandments, but realize that the commandments by themselves are useless without offering up a spiritual service of worship, in which there are no minimums. One's faithful obedience is defined not only by how often he loves and forgives and serves, but also his attitude toward love and forgiving and service. And without that attitude, without the proper attitude there, then all the acts themselves really fall flat. Well, God's going to make good on those in the sense of he's going to take your acts of love and service and he's going to do good things with them, but you yourself aren't going to benefit from that, is really what he's saying in so many words. And I know that this bothers some people too, because when it comes to religion, just like anything else, we kind of like to have things all calculated and quantified and measured out for us. I think this is the big appeal, in one sense, behind, say, Catholicism, which has been around for a long time, and, whether you realize it or not, has conditioned a lot of our thinking about religion. What does the Catholic Church do? Well, I'm not picking on it when I say this. It's just a matter of history and a matter of their own doctrine. The Catholic Church basically says you laity, we clergy, we're going to take care of all the business stuff, the business end of things. You guys just, be good Catholics and do the minimal amount of service, and we'll take care of you at the end. We'll take care of the sacraments. We'll make sure that you're going into heaven. We'll make sure you get forgiven and all those sort of things. And people kind of like that. Unfortunately, that carries over into Christian religion, where Jesus is talking about, you know, giving your heart and giving your love and so on. Genuine Christianity does not leave your heartfelt expression of faithfulness and obedience to someone else to decide for you. God expects you to decide it. Think about that. God expects you to decide that. And in the end, God is not going to ask someone else how you live for him. He's going to ask you how you live for him. Well, actually, he's going to tell you how you lived for him, because he doesn't need to ask anyone. And if that seems difficult or even overwhelming, it's really not at all. If you give your heart to him first, then that is the most important thing. Everything else is going to fall into place. Give your heart to him first is what he wants from us. Well, let's look at the other side of this here. In Luke chapter 10, verse 25 through 29, you know, this lawyer says, well, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus says, well, what's the law say? You already know the answer, basically, right? And so he says so. And he said, love God with all your heart, love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, you've spoken well. Do this and you will live. But then it says, and wishing to justify himself. That's right. You know, you were doing so well up until that point, right? Now, in order to make sure that no one thought that you were asking a pointless question in the first place, now you ask what seems to be an unanswerable question, or a question that might get Jesus put into a corner where he maintains control over Jesus rather than the other way around. And so he says, well, and who is exactly my neighbor? What is the maximum extent of such love that I have to show? You see, to a Jew, often, to love God meant perform the duties of the law of Moses. And since that is all spelled out in the law, then they knew where that began, and they also knew where that ended. They knew where the parameters were, the boundaries of that. They knew, you know, the minimums, they knew the maximums. But then in Leviticus 19, verse 18, God says, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And there's no limitation on that. And they kind of step over that, okay? They kind of, just are kind of oblivious to that, or just ignore it intentionally there. And this neighbor thing is bothersome, because if that neighbor is a Jew, and if it's convenient and if the situation is very comfortable, well, then that's fine. I have no problem loving someone under that circumstance or in that context, right? I mean, that's no problem there to love such a person. But if it's beyond that, if it's more than expected, well, now it becomes very inconvenient and very uncomfortable. And Jesus, through this Good Samaritan parable, as it's often referred to, there in chapter 10 of Luke, verse 30 through 37, essentially says there is no limit. Everyone is your neighbor who is in need of your mercy. And that could be anyone. It could be everyone, for all I know. And thus, the spiritual application of the law of Moses was not bound by mere commandment keeping, but by something unlimited and immeasurable. And there are some Christians, of course, who are like this lawyer. What is the most I have to do? Where's the limit? How far do I have to go and no farther? What is the extent? What is the maximums of my service to God? Translation, when do I have to stop? When do I get to stop? How far is far enough? When is God finally satisfied? What is the most that I have to give, the most I have to sacrifice, and still get into heaven? And you know that God is never satisfied by mere observance of laws and rules and regulation. He seeks a higher law, the law of the heart, really the law of love itself. Because religion that is built merely on laws, without grace and mercy and love, is just another yoke of slavery, another form of oppression. It's a burden. It's just another form of tyranny, really. That's all it is by itself. And yet we're told in Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, that it was for freedom that Christ set us free. No maximums, no end, no limits. For freedom that he set us free. Not to be tyrannized, not to be burdened, not to be oppressed, not to have some kind of, you know, ogre, as some think of God, you know, sitting there and confining them to this life of slavery. You know, obey these laws, obey these commandments. It's not like that at all. And again, this bothers some people. Since Christianity is more than what is written, then that leads to a personal responsibility, or leads to one's own personal decision as to how they're going to serve God. It's not all spelled out. It's not all measured out. There is no clock to watch here. There is no time control or time card to punch. There is no quota to meet. There's no board of directors dictating the boundaries of your service to God, or in our illustration, the service to the company, the service to the church. God is in essence saying there is no end to where this might lead. In fact, it is something that has no end. It has something that is endless and boundless. I want you to think about this. Christianity is not about barely being something or not. One is not barely a Christian. That idea is foreign to the gospel. And neither are there limits to Christian duty. That also is foreign to the gospel. God is spirit. God is infinite. God is without limit. And Christianity, this way of life that God has given to us to follow, is based upon his own divine nature. It is also spiritual, boundless, and unlimited. Now, I understand how this works in the real world as far as, you know, physical three-dimensional life. I get that. God sets boundaries, and we have to live within those boundaries. You can't step outside the, say, gravity or thermodynamics or physics or something like that. You just can't exempt yourself and ignore those things, well, without consequence anyway. But that refers to actions and decisions in this life, not spiritual virtues. All right, so how do we illustrate? Well, some of you have heard my racquetball illustration. I'm going to give it to you again anyway. Just bear with me, all right? So this is part of suffering. So just imagine, you know, everyone knows a racquetball court. I hope you know anyway. A racquetball court is a completely enclosed court. You know, from the floor to the walls to the ceiling, completely enclosed. And then you hit this racquetball around in the court and sometimes, you know, other people. But my point here is that the racquetball is bouncing all over in this court. The makers of the court did not determine what the ball is going to do when it's in that court. But they did determine how far it's going to go. Pause for thought. Because what we're really referring to in that context there is God's control over the physical realm, over your life and your lifespan and all those physical things. You can only do so much. God is not going to tell you all the things that you are going to do or what you can do in that parameter of the court, if he's the maker of this court. You decide or make a lot of decisions about all of that, but he does bind you to a certain parameter. He's the one who made the court, and you're not going to go outside that. Now think about this spiritually, okay? Now change the dial a little bit. Change the channel. I want you to think about God saying, okay, now as a Christian, we're going to play racquetball, and the court walls all fall flat, and there is no ceiling. That doesn't make sense, does it? That defies our natural explanation of the game. And that's exactly what God is saying. We're going to play this game, so to speak. And we're not going to have any walls. Spiritually speaking, that's really what God is talking about. So in the physical world, yeah, there's limitations. There's only so much you can do physically. In a three-dimensional world, it's bound by laws of nature, physics, and so on. But in the spiritual realm, dealing with spiritual values and spiritual virtues, well, that's a different story. All the walls fall flat. There are no walls. In other words, as created beings, we cannot exceed that physical, moral impositions of the Creator, what He imposes upon His creation. But when we imitate Him in pursuing His spiritual qualities and His spiritual virtues and His spiritual holiness, there are no limits, and nor will we be concerned with keeping a ledger or any kind of record-keeping about what we do. There's no accounting that's necessary. In the physical world, there's lots of accounting. People staring at the clock or staring at their watches. People looking at the calendar. People, you know, going through the schedule. What's the itinerary? You know, what are we going to do next? There's all kinds of accounting and bookkeeping, right? We get that. That's in the physical world, I should say. In the spiritual realm, all that goes away. We don't keep track of anything. That doesn't mean it's not important, because it's more important than the other. That doesn't mean that it has no calculation at all, because God keeps track of that, but we don't have to. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23, read with me here. Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23. Think about what we just said, and now read this passage on the heels of what we just said. But the fruit of the Spirit is all about keeping track of everything you do for God. And then holding this up as a badge of honor. See, look, I did this much. No, it doesn't say any of that, does it? But the fruit of the Spirit is about all these timeless, endless things. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And then, against such things, there is no law. There's no boundary. There's no walls, if you will. That's pretty amazing to me. I hope it is amazing to you that we have a God who is like that in His own nature, boundless, wall-less, if you will, one who we don't tell what to do and never know exactly what He's going to do next. Okay, someone has said once, God is always up to something, right? And that's really a neat way of looking at it. God is always up to something. We don't necessarily know what He's up to, but He's always up to something, and it's beyond us to determine what it is. The fruit of the Spirit really refers to the qualities, the virtues, the behaviors that are not just spiritual in nature, but are consistent with the divine nature Himself. Against such things there is no law, because just as God is immeasurable and infinite Himself, so are the expressions of His nature, expressions of His righteousness. Well, what does that mean? Well, God does set limits of human actions and human decisions. We know that. We said that. We agree with that. God can intervene in our world anytime that He wants to, should the need arise. He can intervene in our world because He's the Creator, but we cannot alter His world. And He does not put limits on the things that we do for Him in our world. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and so on. How little love or kindness do I have to show? What's the minimum I have to do and still be pleasing to God? Well, that's an irrelevant question. In fact, it's just kind of an insult to God to ask such a question. And so with maximums, right, how much do I have to do? And then God will be happy with that. Well, that's an irrelevant question. There's no minimums and maximums. You see, when I'm in a racquetball court, there's a minimum and there's a maximum. I can only go so far one way, and I can only go so far the other way. There's a boundary on either side. But remember, the walls have all fallen flat here. And there is no limit on either side. And these things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, the fruit of the Spirit cannot be contained or restrained or bound by law. As infinite as the Spirit is, so is the service of a spiritual heart. So someone says, well, how much forgiveness do I have to show? Well, there's no limit. As often as it's asked and needed, well, then forgive. You have perfect freedom here. There's no law. There's no one telling you to stop. In fact, Peter even asked Jesus a question like that. How many times? And Jesus says, basically, there's no limit here. Nobody's keeping track. How often do I show mercy? Well, there's no limit. As often as the occasion requires. No one can prevent you. No one's keeping record of that. There's no, you know, this much or that much. There's no minimum. There's no maximum. If mercy is necessary, then show it. And don't worry about it. Well, how much self-control? When do I stop? How much kindness? When do I need to stop? When is enough enough? And all these other things, faithfulness, love, joy, peace, and all these other things that are fruit of the Spirit. Well, nobody can dictate those things for you. You are free to do those things. Remember the sign, we're not free unless we're, you know, always free from everything, or however the lady said it there in the sign there. And here God is saying, you are free to do all of these things as much as you want to. There's no one keeping track of them. Not even God himself is stopping you from doing all these things. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? If you give your heart to God, then your entire life becomes service to God. There is no measuring. There is no bookkeeping. There is no keeping track. There is no minimum. There is no maximum. You look on the screen, we got a little simple diagram of what I'm talking about here. Okay? There's that bookend idea above on the top part there. Here's a guy who's saying, well, you know, how little do I have to do, and then how much is enough? And then on the bottom, here's that love without limits thinking. I'll just do whatever it takes. Whenever I need to do it, doesn't matter. I'm just going to do it. That person has given his heart to God. The other person's still wrangling over laws and details and limitations. You know, Jesus always leads by example, and he never imposed a minimum or maximum mentality on his own love for us. Just think about that. Jesus did not just barely save us from hell. He allows us into his own presence, and that is infinite glory and infinite happiness. Now, we haven't seen all that yet, but he has promised it, and we have every reason to believe him. He does not just offer minimum sacrifice on our behalf, because he gave the very best that ever was, the very best that ever has been, better than any angel could have given, better than any man could have given, better than any living creature could have given. He gave more than all of those things. He did not just barely show the way, but as Peter says, the entrance into the eternal kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ will be abundantly supplied to you. Not just minimally, abundantly. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 11. Jesus does not limit our understanding, but the access to the height, the breadth, the length, the depth of the love of Christ, Paul says, surpasses all knowledge, really all human knowledge. Ephesians 4, verse 18 and 19. And I think that's actually Ephesians 3, verse 18 and 19 there. So the point here is he never says, I'll do this much, but no more than that. He never said that, never exercised that, never lived like that. He never did what some of us have done in putting limits and boundaries on service to God. He never did that. And he's encouraging us and really beckoning us to follow him in that way. Don't put limits and boundaries on your service to God. Now, don't take that to an inappropriate context here, like, well, this is going to be one long church service right here tonight. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. We're talking about your personal, your holy service to God, your what you choose to do for the Lord, not what we choose to do collectively. We've talked about that in our recent lessons, but what you choose to do because you've given your heart to him. So let me ask you, are you trying to do as little as possible? Or do you feel like you've done enough? Have you met your quota for the day, for the week, for whatever? Yeah, I've shown enough kindness this week, I'm done. You know, I've already met my quota. Don't have to show any more. I've already forgiven this week. I already showed love. I've already done that. I've already said my, 3.9 prayers or whatever it is. And so I'm all done praying for the week. I've met my quota. Well, I know I'm being facetious when I say all that, but you know there's some people that actually think along those lines. Like, I've done enough. Galatians chapter 5, verse 1 again, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. For freedom. Not free to do anything we want to, which is physically and morally impossible anyway, but free, first of all, from condemnation. That's one aspect of freedom. free from being condemned by God, but also free to practice the fruit of the Spirit without measure, without limit, without boundary, without law. There is no law against such things. Discipleship is not measured by the number of actions accomplished, because it never has been. Rather, it's really measured by the quality of one's love for the Master. It's measured by the quality of one's love for the Master. A love that does not try to limit godliness or righteousness, but seeks to practice however often as possible. Seeks to practice those things however often is necessary. Bottom line of what I'm saying is, I'll say again, Christ wants your heart. He doesn't want just your mere compliance. Oh, compliance comes with the heart. There's that too. Okay, compliance to the specific things that he's asked for. But he's not after just mere compliance. He wants your heart. Really what he wants is your love with that heart. Not just mere observance of commandments, but your love for him. Your loyalty is what he also wants. That's all part of the package there with heart. Love and loyalty all come with the heart. Not just a mere adherence to laws. And each one of us has the perfect freedom to decide and to determine when and what and how much and how often we are going to practice the virtues of God. Every one of us gets to decide on our own. We don't have a church quota. We don't have a board of directors determining it. We don't have a clergy system that tells the laity, you know, how often they have to do whatever they're going to do, and then, okay, you've done enough, we'll take it from here. We don't have any system like that. Nothing biblical anyway. That's a good thing, isn't it? There are no limits on practicing godliness in this life. Even then, we still depend upon the grace of God. Don't get me wrong, like we're stepping outside of that realm of God's grace. We're not. But no one is earning their way to heaven. And yet, only those who conform to God's holy nature are going to be admitted into heaven. So what does he want from us? Well, here's my advice to myself as well as you. Let's go out and practice our discipleship to Christ without keeping track of the time spent, without keeping track of the miles driven, without keeping track of the effort that is exerted, without keeping track of the number of times we had to counsel put our arms around someone and console or edify or encourage, and without keeping track of the number of prayers that are offered or the number of good deeds that have been done. Love without limits and forgive without limits whenever it is needed. Then forgive, give generously, serve happily. That's what God wants us to do. Now, if you take all that, what we just said tonight, and you apply it to what we've been saying on Sunday mornings, you're going to see how it all comes together. We've been talking on Sunday morning about what we do collectively. Now we're talking about what we do individually. And it's all part of the same package. It's all part of what we call Christian life. Here's the question at the bottom of the screen. Does he have your heart? Does he have your heart? I'm not worried about someone else here, but you. Okay? Does he have your heart? And if he does, well, then you ought to be showing that. Loving without limits. Not the minimums and maximums thing. That's for people that are schooled on just commandment keeping and laws and things like that. But we want to do those things and then some. We want to get beyond that. Give them our heart. If you need to respond to our lesson tonight, this will be your time to come forward if you need to. We certainly want you to come forward if that is your desire. And we will certainly want to help you if indeed we can. And we certainly can offer prayers on your behalf. And if that's what you would like us to do, then please come forward as we stand and sing the song Bob's going to lead us in right here.